Chapter 48. New York, September 1986. It was early evening, and beyond the glass a purplish haze had bled into the blue of the sky nearest the horizon, above the tops of the tallest trees in the park. We were entering that time of year, and the time of day in which I've always felt the light is at its richest, some recompense from nature, perhaps, before the impending plunge into night and winter. Alice had made us our drinks herself, insisting to Julie that she had done enough for the day. They were a deep and luminous orange-red, and very strong. They were Negronis, the drink Alice had discovered as a girl in Venice. "Do you like it?" she asked, watching me take my first sip. "I don't know." The sweetness was cut by a cough remedy bitterness, and the gin bit at my throat, yet it intrigued me too, and made me take another draught. Alice looked pleased by my answer. "Then you will come to love it. If you don't detest it from the off, it'll have its chance to grow on you." "Is that a good thing?" "In moderation, yes." She smiled. I was beginning to know that smile. Slow, thoughtful, heavy-lidded. "I hope it isn't a disappointment. I wasn't one of those girls who jumped from planes in the middle of the night, or carried secret messages in their knickers. But to my defence, I think it's fair to say that what we were doing was arguably as useful to the cause, and perhaps as dangerous, as all of that. We were showing people that hope was not lost, that someone was fighting for them. That is a potent thing. The way the Boches," she favoured this word rather than Nazis or Germans, "reacted shows that they recognised that fact." She took out a tin then, and opened it to reveal a row of slim white cigarettes, snugly packed, some foreign brand. "Would you like one?" I realised I hadn't known that she smoked. "A habit from war," she said, by way of explanation. "A filthy one, too, but I find that it relaxes one so efficiently." Alice lit one for me, then another for herself. She smoked thoughtfully, not hungrily, as many people do. She made it look almost like a form of meditation. "I think it was the feeling of doing something," she said. "It was the same for Hélène. She'd never had a job. She confided in me. She'd never been anything much besides a wife and a mother. Yet it turned out that she was useful, despite her doubts. She had a natural way with words, and she was good at writing pieces for the leaflets, pieces that might incite ordinary French people to action, not just those that were already politicised. She was also extremely brave, right up until the end. Hélène and I were the only two who weren't political. Nearly everyone else in that room was a communist, had been part of the Popular Front, even Georgette, who had been involved in some student movements. The situation we were in, I felt the important thing was to be joined in the cause, if not in precisely the same ideology. Do you understand?" I said that I did. "Before I joined them," she said, "I like to think of myself as brave. But when I thought back on it, I'd run away from everything I was afraid of. My mother, my stepfather, what had happened. Even love. I've since learned that to overcome fear one must confront it. It might sound like a tired platitude, and perhaps it is, but it's the way I've tried to live my life ever since."